Let's talk. Let's chat. Let's have a conversation on the national level. Morris, good day.
Good morning, Luke. How are you?
Morris, I've never seen a brighter. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Hobart.
You're in Hobart. Great to have you aboard.
Yes, great to be first caller.
Your first caller from Hobart. Yes, indeed. What do you do?
I run my own business, we'll put it that way.
You run your own business. That's all you want to say. Fair enough.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Now, euthanasia. Surely people should be able to do what they do what they need to do if they're in pain. You know, if they get the doctor's permission or medical certificate or whatever, you know, to say that they're in pain and they need to go, well, surely to God, in this day, this society, we can let it happen.
Listen, I agree with you, but the person who is in pain has got to be of sound mind. Now, if you or I are in enormous pain, are we of sound mind? You're not yourself. I'm not of sound mind when I'm tired, let alone experiencing the rack-filled pain that someone who's dying is filled with. So that's my only concern. How level-headed are you when you make this decision? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, but that's where the doctor should come into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And anyway, another thing, Luke, you were talking a while back about trading. Now, we've just bought an apartment up at the Gold Coast and we went up to renovate it for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
21 plumbers I had to ring before I got one.
Is that right? What, they're just all too busy?
Well, don't answer the phone. Couple come and couldn't get parking, so they just kept going. Hughes wanted to know what sort of work it was, and they pick and choose what they want.
Yep.
11 electricians we had to ring.
This is in Tasmania. This is in Hobart.
No, this is up on the Gold Coast.
Oh, sorry, you said that, yes.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't happen down here in Tassie, mate, I can tell you that.
What would happen if it was in Tassie?
The first plumber you'd ring would be there.
Yeah, yep.
You know, it's just, yeah, I don't agree with it anyway. I realise there must be a lot of work going on with the games and all that going on, but there must be plumbers out there, surely, God.
Let's ask the question, Morris. All tradies who are listening in right now, why is it sometimes so hard to get one of you guys to come along? And when they start a job, I know that lots of tradies have three or four jobs on the run at the same time, right?
That's correct.
So they'll start doing a job and then you won't see them for a week and a half.
Yeah, well, that doesn't happen with me, but it does happen, yes, I know. And they pick and choose what work they do. But in saying that, Luke, the tradies that we did get up there, they were bloody fantastic. We couldn't have wished for better boys.
Well, that's good. I guess the best way to pick a tradie is word of mouth, isn't it? You know, if someone makes a personal recommendation, that's who you tend to go with, isn't it?
The trouble is, we've only just bought the unit up there and we've never been there. We know no one up there.
So yeah, yeah.
Behind the ball from the start.
I'm with you.
Yeah, but we got a couple of good people and Shoreline Plumbing, yeah, I'll give him a mention. He couldn't have wished for a better plumber.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I tell you what, a very good mate of mine, I used to do a radio program with him on another network. His name is Simon Stevenson. Just write this down next time you need help. And Simon has a national network. He's a very good mate of mine. My son works for him. But he's got this fabulous website called Simon's House. And he's got recommended tradesmen from all over the place on it. These are people that he recommends. And if you are looking for a good tradie on the Gold Coast, let's say you were after a Sparky. Well, you'd ring Steve Stamos, who is Simon's number one Sparky, and Steve would say to you, Morris, here's the bloke you need to call. I know this guy on the Gold Coast. He's great. I'll give you a recommendation. You see how it works?
I need that website.
Simon's House. There's no apostrophe.
Simon's House.
Have a look at that website, because if there's someone on there but not in your area, you ring that person on that website and they will recommend someone.
Excellent.
I know, I know.
Well, another thing, Luke.
Yeah.
This debate that they've just had in the Melbourne Parliament, why would it have been easier just to put that on the vote yes or no to the gay marriage?
On the plebiscite.
And have the two questions?
Yeah, it's more than just a question. And believe it or not, the gay marriage thing is more than just a question. With the voluntary euthanasia, there are so many little illegal loopholes. I don't think it would work. It's just so complicated. It's more than just yes or no. It would give the politicians a vague idea of how the electorate feels. Yes, I grant you that. I grant you that. But, like, for example, they're talking about there should be three doctors that make the decision. And how do you protect somebody's life from, say, a greedy, merciless relative? You with me?
That's right, yes. And they are out there, unfortunately.
Yes, they are. And when you're not well and you're on medication and you're in a lot of pain, you're not thinking straight, are you?
That's correct.
This is what. How do you protect people from that?
I don't know.
That's why I'm bringing it up tonight. Let's see if we can find some answers. That's what we do here.
Pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure talking to you too, Morris. You ring back any day. Nice to have our first caller this morning from Hobart, Tasmania, through the Triple M network. Well, there you go. 133353 is the number. If you want to become a member of our family on Facebook, The Night Shift on Triple M, you can tweet us at MMM Night Shift, and you can email nightshift@triplem.com.au. G'day, Paul, who's in Geelong.
Oh, g'day, Lukey. How you going, buddy?
Good, thanks, Paul. What's happening?
Oh, living the dream, mate. Living the dream.
And what is the dream?
Oh, mate, I'm just heading to Melbourne, and I'm shooting a commercial in the morning in the AM, so I'm just heading up there now. So it's going to be a bit of fun.
You're shooting a commercial? What do you do?
Yeah. I do a little bit of acting, so I'm shooting a Honda commercial in the morning. So
really?
It's going to be awesome. Yeah, it's going to be sick.
Are you the lead player in the ad or just an extra?
Oh, come on, Lukey. I'm playing the lead.
I'm playing the lead, mate.
Come on. Yeah.
No, because I've done a little bit of this and it's very hard to get into. Are you a trained actor or you just joined an agency or what?
Yeah, look, I've been doing it since I've been 17 and I'm 37 now. So I've been in it for ages. I opened up my own acting school, went over to America, did all that stuff and came back and, was lucky enough to get a couple of things. And it's really difficult, mate, but it's almost like a girlfriend. You've got to sort of, get obsessed in it to really take it to the next level, you know what I mean?
Okay. What ads would we know you from?
Well, there's a Honda commercial out at the moment, which is called Frames, and I'm in that at the moment. And I've got all these photos of me holding all my Honda equipment, like the whippersnapper and this and that. And then I'm laying there on the couch, and my kids and my wife come home, and I turn around all the frames because I'm, shitting myself. And then, they come in, and I've turned all the frames around to the right way, which is photos of my family. So that's one that I shot couple of months ago, and it's airing at the moment.
I don't know if I've seen it. Is it on free to air?
Yeah, it's on. That one's Foxtel and social media.
I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I've just done like a couple of series and stuff. I mean, yeah, it's difficult to get into, but once you're in the door, you lots of things open.
Yeah. So once they know you're professional, you're on time, you're accurate, they tend to hang on to you.
100%. And the go is, as you know, you've got to make your own work. So we did a web series called Rostered On, and we were really lucky. We've had like 100 million views on it. It's about working in retail, and I've done that. And I played a character called Sean in that. I think you would have a good laugh. That's on YouTube.
When we go onto YouTube, what do we type in?
Rostered On.
Jess?
You're right, Rostered On, and there's six episodes, and it's about a dude that works in retail and about how he has to suck it in and take crap from everyone because he just wants to make an honest living.
Okay, so, Rostered On. Yeah. Jess is on the word already. Tell me, for all the people listening in now who think that they'd like to have a crack at doing some part-time work, maybe an extra in a commercial or something like that.
Yep.
How do you get into it? If you want to go on, say, Home and Away or Neighbours, and you're happy just to be one of the people sitting in the cafe in the background, how do you go about it?
Well, there's a couple of agencies in Melbourne and all around that specifically, do this stuff. Real People is one. So, for example, you would ring them up, you'd go in, have a chat, they'd just make sure that you weren't a nuffy. They'd get you on the books, you'd pay you $200, and pretty much, they'll throw you around all the different TV series, your Neighbours, Home and Away's up in Sydney, obviously, but any other, Dr. Blake, any other series they might be shooting around Melbourne, they'll organise it for you. And you actually get paid pretty good, like $50 plus per hour. And a lot of it is sort of hanging around and just being available for when they need you. And they'll feed you beautifully, like the catering's next level.
Yeah. I've done a couple of TV ads. I did a Commonwealth Bank ad. And I've
did
done,
you?
And I did a real insurance ad where I wore a purple T-shirt and I was shining up an old Cadillac. And,
good on you.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a funny experience because I noticed that there was a definite social structure within the cast. Now the crew,
yes.
the crew, and yes. the principals sat at one table and they got a yes. level of catering. And then the other table over here, where just the Nuff-Nuffs and the Mick-Mocks in the background that were walking around circles, they got Devon rolls.
Yeah, mate. There's nothing worse when I've been lucky to play a couple of the bigger roles on different things, and when you're lining up, you know, they put the leads or the bigger players up first, and then the extras are at the end. And I always felt bad, you know. I always used to sort of grab them and sneak them in the front and go, "Get it in you, mate. You guys work harder than us."
I remember years ago, I did an ad for Rocher Ferrer. What's it called? Kinder Surprise.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I was just in the background. Anyway, it was an experience. Anyway, the bloke who was in the front of the ad with this little boy. It was an Indian man and his son, and they were playing cricket. The ad still runs. Anyway, we went to go and have lunch at the catering, where the catering trucks had pulled up, and they got pudding, and we didn't. Anyway, I went up to get some pudding, and no one said anything, but the filthy looks. It really is it's a social structure. It's quite...
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people can't handle doing the extra work for that long because of that, you know what I mean? I mean, if you're working on a big movie and you go and talk to the leads from America and stuff, you know, people look at you funny, but that's what I hate about it. It's like we're all even. At the end of the day, we all bloody...
Hey, what about Kramer meeting Woody Allen? These pretzels are making me thirsty. No, it's these pretzels are making me thirsty. These pretzels are making me thirsty. That was
correct.
That was his one big line, and he got sacked before he could deliver it.
Nice, well played.
What's the biggest role you've ever had?
Probably I was lucky enough to play a role on Winners and Losers. I played a character called Wes, which was Wes and Bridget.
What's that? What's Winners and Losers again?
Winners and Losers was on for about 5 seasons. It was the four girls that won the lottery, and then they ended up sort of, got all this money, and then it showed how their lives, you know, were full of drama. Even though they had tons of money, their life was still crap. You know what I mean? And that was on for about 5 seasons. So yeah, I played a character called Wes, which was like a reoccurring role, and that was about 52 episodes. So it was bloody, that was the life, mate. I was loving it.
Do you remember this bloke James Michael Tyler? Does that name ring a bell?
James Michael Tyler. Why's that? Should
okay.
I know him?
He started off as an extra,
yeah,
just in the background, and then yeah. and then sort of became a central character in Friends. He was Gunther. Who used to run the cafe.
Yes,
and he was just a Neville nobody, you know, pretending to make coffee in the background, and slowly bit by bit, he became a character, and he became Gunther.
He would have been stoked. That happens all the time when they'll get a little character in, and because they're writing real time, so they're always a little bit in front, but they can always change it. If they like someone, you're right. I saw that happen heaps where they'd bump him up and get him into the story for sure. He would have been wrapped. He would have made heaps of money off that. Good
yeah, he did. He became quite famous, Gunther. And then there was the other lady who was behind the cash register in the restaurant in Seinfeld, in the cafe.
Yeah. Yeah. And she got more and more airtime. She must have, you know, been really relaxed, and the crew must have really liked her, and she must have just been a lovely person, you know?
Well, on the episode where George was losing his mind, he gave her, I think, a $10 bill, and he reckoned it had lips written on it, and she gave him the wrong change. And it turned into a really big episode for her.
Oh, beautiful. That sounds funny.
And she was just in the background. Yeah, so it can happen. So what are your dreams? Do you hope to make it big one day? You'll be discovered, or are you happy just to plod along and do what you're doing? You sound like you love it.
Oh, I love it's the best. So I run sort of, you know, sometimes I run like corporate events, you know, for confidence and getting people out of their shell. And my main thing is, you know, helping kids with their confidence, because I think when I was young, I was a little bit shy. You know, I couldn't even sit next to a girl without having a panic attack and sweating. But my dreams, like I said, creating my own work, and this rostered on that we've just created, we've been lucky enough to, because it's sort of taken off. We've had a $200,000 grant thrown at us from the government.
Wow.
To make another six episodes. The producers over in London at the moment potentially doing a spin-off over there. So, you know, there's cool stuff happening. And I love it, mate.
How old are you, Paul?
I'm 37.
Yeah, well, you sound a lot younger. You've got a lot of energy, and I wish you all the best. And if someone's thinking about getting into maybe just being an extra in the background of a commercial, how do you know the agency you want to join is the right one?
Yeah, look, be aware. There are a lot of dodgy ones. There are a lot of ones that will tell you what you want to hear, and they'll charge you through the roof, blah, blah, blah. What I would say would be, you don't want to pay any more than sort of $200 or $300. That's sort of your max.
These are for your photos.
Well, you want that included. So you want them to go, it's $200 or $300. We'll take photos of you. We'll put it on our website, and we'll be able to get you work, and that covers the admin and everything. And you should get sort of $200 or $300 back from your first gig anyway. So it's a good investment. But there are a lot of sharks. You can go onto the there's a website, Equity Actors Equity. Has got a website you can go onto and see, you know, who's reputable, but you've got to be careful. I know so many people that just get rolled.
Yeah, for sure. All right, look, it's been good talking to you, but that's not why you rang.
No, that's right. Do you want me to go?
No.
I've taken up so much of your time, mate.
No. What you rang up to talk about stuff you got up to when you were young.
Oh, mate, I was wetting myself. I was driving, and you said, what's something that you did when you were younger that you got away with? And I just started laughing, and I've never shared this with anyone. But one time with my bro was sort of 5 or 6 years older than me, and we went surfing, and we got back home, and my brother, you know, we had a bong inside, you know, a billy, you know. He liked to smoke a little bit of pot now and then. So
how old were you at this point?
I was about 14, 15, right?
So your brother's 17, 18.
Oh, no, he was up there. He was about 20. So he was 20. I was 15. And then we rock home, and he's like, can you rush in and get the billy? You know, it's in your room sort of thing. So I rushed in, went inside, pulled my drawer out. It was under my drawer. I grabbed it, and it was in a plastic bag, right? And as I turned around, my mum came in my room, and I was just holding this bong, looking at my mum. She'd be mortified if she knew what it was. She would lose her absolute mind. So I panicked and just ran out of the house. And she just ran to the front door, yelled like, Paul, what are you doing? I ran down to the crocodile track. My brother's sitting out the front going, what's going on? I stashed it, got rid of it, and I came back. And I came up with the best thing. I said, Mum, I bought my brother a vibrator for his 21st birthday, and I was really embarrassed and didn't want to tell you.
You brought your...
And she and yeah, because it was shaped kind of the same as a vibrator, it was just a long thing wrapped in bloody plastic bag. I said it was a vibrator for his 21st birthday, and I was real embarrassed. I didn't want my mum to see me holding a vibrator. And she's looking at me going, Paul, come here, give me a hug. It's okay if you want to get sexual toys for your brother. That's fine. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, man, I've pulled this bad boy off, and she doesn't know, and I feel bad. She's still alive. You know, one day I just want to tell her that it was that's what it was, poor lady.
Oh, mate, that's very funny. What would your brother want with a vibrator, though? I mean, seriously.
I know.
Where'd you pull that one from? Anyway, it worked.
It works, mate. Happy days.
Good on you, mate. This is nice talking to you. Thanks for your call.
All right. See you on the flip. Good on you, Luke.
Good on you, Paul. Bye-bye. Nice to know you're listening. 133353. So tell me, have you ever been in a movie or a commercial? What did you do? And how much did you get paid? Did you meet anyone famous? Give us a call and let us know. 133353. And what did you get up to when you were young that you got away with while your parents were away? Can you top that? Give us a call right now. This is The Night Shift on the Triple M Network. Just before I went to the break, Nathan rang me. Nathan works at an airport towing planes. We were talking about the behind-the-scenes airport workers like Nathan, and baggage handlers, caterers, engineers, maintenance staff. They're all going to undergo heightened random security checks, including screening for traces of explosives. The federal government's cracking down on potential insider threats. Nathan also has started to tell me about his views on voluntary euthanasia. Just quickly, Nathan, getting back to the extra security.
Mm-hmm.
You're behind the scenes. Are you completely satisfied that your colleagues around you, also in behind the scenes at the airport, are screened thoroughly? Have you ever worked with someone and gone, not so sure about him?
Mate, to be honest with you, no. But to be honest with you, I mean, it would be pretty easy for us to pose a serious threat if we wanted to. Do you know what I mean? And the thing about it is that you know, they don't really focus on us quite so much because of our ASICs, and the ASICs obviously get I really don't want to say this, but to be honest with you, I could pose a serious threat if I really wanted to. Like I really could. You know, there'd be no problem me sneaking in something into the airport if I wanted to.
What sort of security checks are in place for people like you behind the scenes at the airport now?
Mm-hmm. Well, we get our bags obviously checked, and they visually inspect our bags. But obviously, there's a lot of people going in and out, and so you know, it could be more thorough, that's for sure. And you know, but there's also, and when we go upstairs, we get tested the same way that the general public does. For example, if we go up to get lunch or something, we have to go through the security screening to get up there as well. So, I mean, if you did have traces of explosives on you, you'd be picked up going through that process as well. But I mean, God, if you bring your own lunch and you're very careful about hiding something in your bag, you could get through probably pretty easily, to be honest with you.
Yeah, How easy would it be for a baggage handler to tamper mm-hmm. with somebody else's luggage? In other words, the luggage has gone through screening. It's being mm-hmm. it's being put on board inside the fuselage of the plane, which is heading to Bali.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's luggage is then tampered with, and there's a connection in Denpasar waiting for that particular bag. You with me?
Yeah, yeah, no. And we had nothing to do with Chappelle Corby as well, by the way. No, but mate, it would be easy. Like, to be honest with you, it would be easy. But it's like anything, mate. Like, you know, it would be easy if you wanted to get a gun and mow down a whole bunch of people in it. It's just whether you're a psycho or crazy enough to do it. And that's what it's all about, really. You know, I mean, as I said to you before, where do you draw the line? I mean, they focus more on the actual passengers. The AFP and everyone else focus more on the passengers because we've already been triple vetted through the process of getting our ASIC, which looks back to our entire history, our criminal records, our education. It takes quite a while for our ASIC to get approved because it goes through various different agencies just to check that we're as clean as a whistle.
Wow. It is impossible, I guess. I mean, if you've got really tough security checks going in and out of prisons, and I've been through three of them as an observer, I've been through a prison where there were sniffer dogs, metal detectors, X-ray machines, physical pat-downs, and contraband still gets into prisons.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Humans will always find a way. That's the thing, mate. You know, they'll always. They're bloody ingenious. Even the worst of us. You know.
All right. Listen. Thank you for that, Nathan. Yeah. Now, quickly, euthanasia. Tell us about your uncle.
Yeah, mate. Well, my uncle is he's got the Order of Australia for radiologists, and he is basically him and my auntie have got the gas cylinders ready to go for when they get to the point where, you know, they don't want to be to the point where they're incapacitated and they want someone else wiping their ass. And basically, so they've just said, we're going to take it into our own hands. And my parents have said exactly the same thing. And
Your uncle's got the gas? What gas?
Well, it's like a lethal gas you can take. Like it's.
Where do you get? I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to tell people where to get it. But he's got.
I don't want to tell people either. But I don't really know. But I know that that's the case. My mum told me about it, and it's funny because I've always been for euthanasia because I really think you know, if people are in pain, they do deserve to pass away with dignity. But another story I've got to tell you is about my grandmother. And this has sort of changed my mind a little bit because she, I don't know, you probably remember the story. She gave birth to my father during a World War II bombing raid under an iron table and cut the umbilical cord herself. So she was a tough old lady.
Yeah.
And she was from Liverpool in the UK, and so are my parents, and actually so is my uncle. I was the last person she spoke to. And I went to visit her in the nursing home because she actually was very, very mobile and used to get around fine. And she lived at Mona Vale, and she got hit by a car on a pedestrian crossing leaving the library. And it threw her about 20 metres, and it basically, she was 80 at that time, and she lived to be 100. And so, but gradually her life went on a decline from there, and she lost the mobility. She lost a bit of her independence because of all this that had happened. And eventually she had to go into a nursing home, but she got a fairly big payout because of the compensation for the injury. But towards the last few years of her life, she was pretty much a vegetable. And so it was funny because I was the last person she spoke to, and she basically said to me, put me down, and they were the words. And I was devastated. I just broke up into tears, and I basically didn't visit her again after that until shortly before she died. But what changed my sort of opinion was because when she was in a vegetative state for the last few years, and I couldn't bear to visit her, to be honest with you. And then towards the end, when she was actually going to die, she made it to 100, and only, I think it's funny because she died not long after she was 100, so I think there was still a clear conscience and a force of will for her to survive up until that point.
She had that milestone in the back of her head, yeah.
Well, I think she was just a tough old lady. She said, stuff you all, I'm going to make it to 100 and then I'm going to go.
Get my telegram from the Queen and then you can all bugger off.
Yeah, well, she did. You don't even get that anymore. You got to bloody pay for it. It's bullshit.
Oh, really? That's another topic we can talk about.
Yeah, hey, I know. It's insane.
Hey, listen, Nathan, I've got to go. You've been great this morning. It's good to hear from you again.
No worries, mate. But the last thing is she actually recognised us, I think, a day before she went. And so, you know, so for that, I think she actually smiled when my mum and dad brought up our names because we visited her. So I think, you know, euthanasia, it's a grey area for me now in that respect. So thanks, mate.
I hear you, Nathan. Thanks for that.
Cheers. Thanks, Luke. Take care.
It's the show that's worth staying up late for. The Night Shift. Around Australia on the Triple M Network.
Do you have a great conspiracy theory? What about Apollo 11, eh? I remember 20th of July, 1969, Mrs. Bailey's classroom, second grade, Eleanor Heights Primary School. And there it was on the black and white TV up in the corner. It's funny, it's the same school, the same room I go to vote now. It's funny. And there's not one doubt in my mind that it really happened. And that Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. But there are plenty of people around today who say, no, conspiracy theory. It happened in a Hollywood studio. Plenty of you have written to us on our Facebook about conspiracies. 9/11, the biggest conspiracy theory of all time, says Wong. Terrorists did not exist before, or did we not hear from them until this day where the US government tried to do another false flag event. And still to this day, our soldiers are still fighting a never-ending terrorist war with no ending, so the Yanks can get oil. Andrew, apparently there are alien structures on the dark side of the moon. They were discovered in the first Apollo 11 landing on the moon in 1967. That was 1969, just for your information, Andrew. And after the last landing in 1972, the aliens warned NASA not to return or else. Which explains why NASA hasn't been back since. I love that one, Andrew. Aliens have warned the United States not to go back to the moon. Ray says Lady Diana isn't dead. Mick says there is a cure for cancer. The UN and other government organisations pay off the scientists not to release the cure because it's the most common disease that evens out the world's population. There is another conspiracy theory that there is a cure for cancer and a cure for a lot of other ailments, including diabetes, but that the pharmaceutical companies won't release the drug that cures you because they're making more money in treating it. Matt says MH370 and MH17 are the same plane. MH370 was flown remotely to Diego Garcia to be then used as a pawn in the US trying to get the world to revolt against Russia. The CIA is behind it all. And Max says the global warming is rubbish. World governments are in cahoots to make money out of us through taxes. There you go. There's some of your thoughts through Facebook on conspiracy theories. 133353. Emma, g'day.
Hello.
Hello, Emma. Welcome along.
Oh, sorry, hang on. I've got to just take you off. Hello.
Yeah, Emma, talk to me.
Yes. Going back to the euthanasia.
Yep.
Yes, my nana, she is 95 next month.
God bless
11th,
her.
11th of the 11th.
Oh, Armistice Day.
Yes. I had a text message off my mum. We're a very close family. I had a text message off my mum 3 weeks ago. Say a prayer for nana. She might not make it through.
What does Nana want to do? Does Nana want to go as hard and as long as she can, or has Nana had enough?
Absolutely. Nana is Nana. Nana, she's nearly 95, and she would literally have a beer.
what's her first name?
Vera.
There, I had a great aunt called Vera. My grandmother had three sisters, Vera, Lena, and Alma. How's that?
Wow. Well, Nana has nine children. Adopted one, but yeah, she had eight of her own and adopted one, but yeah.
And her birthday is on the 11th
of the 11th. Yes. I can't give you the year. obviously. She's 95 next month.
Well, that's a very significant date. It's the 11th of the 11th is the day that Gough Whitlam was dismissed. Did you know that?
I did know that, yes.
And it's Remembrance Day. And guess what else?
What else?
I got a funny feeling that the 11th of the 11th is when Ned Kelly was hanged.
Oh, wow. She is special.
I'm dragging this one out of my ass, but I think the 11th of the 11th is when Ned Kelly was hanged.
Wow.
Nah, mate, you got it right. 11th of November, 1880.
There you are.
Thank you very much. Wow. Wait until I tell Nana that.
Tell Nana that. I know. And so do you have a beer with Nana?
Not anymore. It's a very, very long story. As I was saying, my mum, which is my dad's, get this right. It's my Nana, which is my dad's mum.
Yeah.
She turned a corner and I was like, oh my God, not going to make it through. We were, you know, because we always have the big, I keep listening to myself on the
radio. Well, you've got to turn that radio down. Jess would have told you to do that. Turn it right down, Emma. No, it's still going. I can still hear it.
Yeah. We normally have big.
Emma, you've got to turn the radio down. I hate telling people to turn radios off. It goes against every grain of my being, Jess, to tell people to turn a radio off. Turn it right down.
We're Kiwis as well, so we have a big family. Last time we had a big family do was Christmas, maybe 5 years ago, and we were hoping, Dad thought it was going to be Nana's last one this year. But, yeah, here we were thinking, you know, she's not even going to make it. And then all of a sudden she's bloody kicking goals and ready to keep going again. I totally disagree with the euthanasia. No, you can't do it unless you're in pain and, yeah.
Well, they are the rules. They're the rules. You can't do it unless you're in pain, unless you've got three doctors. This is the formula that they've come up with in Victoria. You would need three doctors to sign off on it. and you would have to prove that you have 12 months or less to live. Those three doctors would have to agree on that, and you have to, it would have to be in a degree of pain. Now, my aunt, who I loved very much, she passed away last month at the age of 91. I used to go and visit her on Saturdays.
Wow. Yep.
And she and I were good mates. And she would come in and out of cohesiveness. She would cohesion. She would sometimes be right on top of it, and then sometimes very forgetful. But she was aware of that. She actually knew that she was fading. And
Sorry, can I interrupt you for 2 seconds? My nana is doing the same thing. My other, well, my dad's brother John. You've got no idea what he is like with nana. Like, you know, he's a mummy's boy. And when she was actually in the hospital because she fell out of bed and broke her hip, he went to see her because she's mummy's boy and all the rest of it. She didn't recognize him, and he was just absolutely devastated.
Yeah.
3 days later, gone back, bang. Oh, John. Oh, John.
Yeah, it comes and goes. Comes and goes. And the thing is, with my auntie Lil, she knew it. She knew she was in and out. She always recognized me, which is good. But she wanted to go, 91. She said, I'm ready to go now. She wasn't in pain, but she said that she was ready to go. Anyway, listen, Emma, I have to leave it there. I've got a network commitment coming up. Thank you so much for telling us about Vera.
Thank you very much for having me on board.
That's a pleasure. Ring back any time, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Just remember, when Jess tells you to turn that radio down, you've got to turn it down because we're on a delay and it gets very distracting. And I don't need more distractions than I already have in my head. Believe me, I have enough voices in there, most of them Jess's. This is The Night Shift on the Triple M Network.